Lunchtime start. The clank of tea mugs.
Well, we are doing well. This is day 14 of no booze until your birthday. Well, actually, I'm doing better than you are because you had a slight aberration.
No, it was an aberration. Sounds like it was a mistake. Homemade Mexican food. Someone says, "Would you like a mojito?" What's the boy to do?
Andale, andale.
It was very tasty indeed.
It was good, huh?
Anyway, welcome to episode 21.
Hello.
What have we got going on this time? Well, I'm Oliver Nielsen, we should say that.
I'm still Vicky McLeod. Hello. And this is Majorca Majorca, the podcast.
I say Majorca, and you say Majorca. I say
Majorca,
and you say
Majorca.
Majorca, 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 Majorca. Let's call the whole thing off.
So you'd be very proud of me.
Why? I'm always proud of you.
No, you'd be super proud of me. I took the car to the car wash today and washed it.
So it's going to rain tomorrow then?
Probably.
It's that time of year.
It was really horrible though. It was covered in the red rain.
We have this thing here at this time of year where the weather shifts and stops coming from France and the Pyrenees mostly, where it's cold and a bit wet, and it turns and just starts coming from Africa, where it's like 10 degrees warmer all of a sudden, and kind of this blech hangs over the
fog.
Tops of the mountain. It's not even fog, it's just heavy, you know, fog's cold. This is heavy, warm, blech.
Muggy, skuggy stuff.
It's muggy.
But the water, the rain has got sand in it.
The rain, we get a little coating of the Sahara Desert, which is always slightly exotic.
It's great if you're a boat owner.
Well,
no, actually, that's not right. It's great if you're a person who works for a boat owner, if you wanted some extra hours.
It's terrible if you're a boat owner. If you're an Australian looking for a day's work in Palmer, it's pay dirt time, literally pay dirt. Because you clean it and then it does it again the next day. Yeah. So if you make boats out of white plastic and park them somewhere where red rain falls from the sky.
Yes. Then, it's your time to shine, guys.
Exactly. Very good.
And the other thing I did today, I went for a hike with the puppies. Uh-huh. I took them around the back of the village and I didn't see a single caterpillar.
How are your bestards?
They're lovely. I really, really love them. My new boots, you mean?
Yes.
Not my puppies.
I know, I do call them that sometimes.
Yes, you do. Sort of. But my boots are super good. I'm wearing them even when I'm not hiking. I'm in love with them. They're really comfortable.
Now, this time of year is also, as you just mentioned, a caterpillar season. In the pine trees, there's these little horrible things.
They're nasty.
They kind of, when you first look at them, you go, oh, look at that.
They're
how
so
cool
cute.
Is that? It's kind of a little ball of spider web about the size of a good melon.
Yeah, they're quite big.
Hanging from a tree.
You can't miss them. They're normally quite big.
No, it's like a sort of ball of spider web. And caterpillars drop out of them, land on the floor, and then walk in a dead straight line, nose to tail.
Nose to tail. That's why they're called
processionarios. But they're evil little buggers, actually. They're poisonous in a very nasty way. They have little spines all over them. And it's very tempting if you're a toddler to go and pick them up, or a dog to eat them, and they've got little poisonous
spines
on them.
They're really, really dangerous, and they're deadly. So
they
if you're new to Majorca, if you've ever thought about bringing your pet here, just this time of year, you need to have an extra set of eyes in your head.
Yeah, if your dog picks them up, they can kill a small dog, or at least damage the inside of the mouth. Dogs have tongues amputated, horrible things.
Yeah.
They only live in pine trees. And so if you're in the oak forests up north, or you're in the countryside away from pine trees, no problem. But in the pine forests, you really got to keep an eye out for them. There is the government here do spend a lot of time trying to eradicate them, with some success, actually.
They've done pretty well.
We live in Andratx in the southwest, and I've always seen them, not loads of them, but this year I haven't seen a single nest in our bit of our neck of the woods, literally. Mm. But they are still there, and keep your eyes open.
Now, I have something for you.
Look, hang on. Pine pollen. Quick, before we move on to whatever that is.
No.
Okay, what is that?
It's red. I'm ready to present you with your present for being a boy.
I didn't know there were prizes.
I went to
How come it's taken me this long to get a prize?
I went to see Emma today, who's she has a bar in Illetas.
Okay.
Called Bar Illetas.
Ah.
Yes, so it's very easy to remember. And she's been making food to take away because obviously all the bars are closed.
Yep.
And
they've all got very resourceful, haven't they?
I have noticed that, yes. Mm. But I specifically wanted to go and support Emma today because not only is she making meaty versions of this little treasure that I'm about to give you, she's also making vegetarian versions, which is really cool. And
Watch
it is something that you don't often see in Mallorca.
Go on. A Scotch egg.
A Scotch egg.
A vegetarian.
That one's not a vegetarian one. That's with pork.
So I've got to take the Pepsi. You shouldn't have told me that. I could have taken the Pepsi challenge.
I think you'll know that the other one's vegetarian because it looks different.
So it's not vegan because there's an egg in it.
No, it can't be vegan. I mean, you can have vegan Scotch eggs.
Am I allowed to taste this?
Go ahead. I want to know what you think.
That's delicious. Because it's a Scotch egg.
Does it need a bit of chutney or something?
No.
Because your dad loves the Scotch egg as well, doesn't he?
Like Gollum likes a ring.
Dan, that's the vegetarian one.
Okay, that was good. This is the vegetarian one.
Yeah, I had a bit of it earlier.
That's all right, isn't it?
Not bad, is it?
Very good.
I asked her what she made the casing out of. I didn't want to be too specific. I don't want to break her recipe or spill the beans. But she said it's like it's chickpeas. It's like a bean burger-y kind of coating.
That would drive Piers Morgan up the wall.
Why?
Did you see how angry he got with and Greg's vegan sausage rolls? I've never seen a man so angry about pastry before. He was in a bit of steam coming out of his ears.
Vegan sausage rolls are a genius idea, though.
I know.
It means everybody can have one.
Well, I think it's a great idea. They were delicious, but Piers Morgan thought this was some sort of a front on his masculinity or something.
So if you're into your Scotch eggs and you live in the southwest of Mallorca, we can highly recommend popping along to Bar Aietes.
Which is a bar in Aietes.
Yes, very easy to find.
Whereabouts in Aietes?
How do I explain that? I don't really know Aietes that well, so I was quite happy that it was called Bar Aietes.
Now's a great time to visit Aietes because you can park, which you can't at any other point in the 17 years we've lived here.
There is actually a car park right next to it.
Okay.
It's around the corner from the spa and Salon Dude, which is a hairdresser's. Keep going around the corner towards the sea from the main road.
Tell you what, just Google it.
Yeah, I'm trying hard. But
round a bit near the sea.
That's nearly
everywhere in Mallorca.
Oh, good. But from next Tuesday, they're going to be able to be open again properly.
All the bars and restaurants are open from Tuesday. Is that right? Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Next Tuesday.
Restrictions.
Yeah.
Heavy ones, actually. You can only sit out. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm riffing slightly, but you can only sit outside. They're going to be open until 5 o'clock. Is that right? It was going to be 4 p.m., but there was a bit of a.
But so only bars with terraces can be open.
Yeah. So there's no sitting inside at all. It was going to be 4, but I think a lot of people who finished work at 5 were like, hey, come on.
I'm going to put this Scotch egg somewhere else now so that we can get on with the rest.
And so it's a little bit of pub opening. Not much, not quite what we all wanted, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. Because I think people are beginning to break ranks very slightly.
Yeah.
In our little...
definitely in our village.
In our little village. Well,
what are they doing, Ollie?
Well, the pub is shut.
Quite innovative of them.
The pub is closed, but next to the pub is a shop that sells beer. it's not strictly legal. So basically, the lads, you know, the kind of... The people who work all day, gardeners and builders and stuff like that, who frankly need a beer at the end of the day, going to the shop, buying a beer and standing outside the closed pub.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the... It's like the pub is already open, but it's cheaper.
It's like a homage to the pub.
Exactly.
Although I don't know where it came from today, but I had a terrible hankering with a sudden for a shandy.
Did you? Oh. Well, Monday's a fiesta, which we'll come to later, but I think Tuesday may well be a self-declared fiesta as well.
Maybe.
I can't imagine everyone's going to work until 5 o'clock in their normal jobs and then the pubs are going to shut as soon as work kicks out.
Mm.
I think there's quite a few people going to have a half day on Monday. And why not? Yeah. Might join them.
A puente. More of a puente.
Yeah, I might join them, actually.
You're giving yourself a day off?
I'm not missing the booze. I'm missing the beer. Not missing the beer. I'm missing the routine of sitting outside the pub.
Social.
I know. Exactly. So presumably that means they're open for coffee in the morning as well on Tuesday.
I hope so, because that's the thing I'm really missing. Is just
coffee and a croissant on the way out in the village.
The croissant. I'm missing not even sitting in that particular cafe. I just like being able to award myself a 20-minute brain break and going and sitting and staring at nothing.
Perch your bum on the wall and have a read through the paper.
Yeah.
And say hello to people as they drive past.
Yeah.
I know. If you don't live here, I mean, it's not a big secret anyway. If you don't live in Spain, you probably already know that it's cafe culture. It is. No, you know, in our little village, we've got a couple of bars, same in every little village, really. Most people don't have breakfast at home. Breakfast at home is not a Spanish thing. You know, you go out and you have a coffee and a croissant in the morning. You don't sit at home with a cup of tea and a bowl of sugar puffs.
But Spanish people don't really have like a tradition of breakfast at all, do they? I mean,
well, they go out for it.
I know, but they don't eat much at breakfast either. Like, British would have, we're into our fry-ups and toast and, you know, we've got like a multitude of options for breakfast. Spanish don't really seem to do that.
With beer or brandy.
That, yes.
And a coffee and a croissant or a pan con tomate, which is really good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Like a tostadas.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like a toasted baguette with some olive oil and some ramayet tomato and some salt. That's nice.
Yeah,
but
good.
That's about...
It's not a bacon sandwich, is it? But it's good.
But what I'm trying to say is there's not many options. They don't really do much with breakfast,
no,
do they?
But they have it out. That's the point, really. So that's Roll on Tuesday.
Yay!
A little bit of normality. Actually, a little bit, but a very important part of normality.
It's so important.
It's, yeah, can't wait.
So next thing, your parents are very excited, aren't they? Because there's a potential for them to come and visit us in May.
The end is in sight. Well, to an extent, anyway. If you're following the UK news, you'll have seen that Boris Johnson... The UK is quite considerably further ahead with its vaccine rollout than almost anywhere else in the world, but certainly everywhere in Europe. I think they're in the UK, they're predicting that they're going to have vaccinated everybody, all the over 40s by the end of March, which is amazing, really, because they're nowhere near that here.
I think they've already started calling the 40-year-olds.
Yeah, they're doing very well, but not so well in the rest of Europe for various different reasons. But Boris Johnson announced a roadmap to unlocking stuff, and it was criticised for being slow, or possibly overcautious is the right way of doing it. I think the pubs, for instance, in the UK had opened, I think, June the 12th or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a long way off, isn't it? They're going to be opening up slowly with schools going back and various different things in 5-week gaps. They'll open up a bit, see how it goes for 5 weeks, and then move on to the next bit. If it's safe to do so, move on again. But the main announcement for Mallorca, really, the relevance here was that international travel may be permitted from the UK from May the 17th at the earliest, to quote Boris Johnson, but they will announce whether May the 17th is a goer on April the 12th. So
that's good. I mean, I'm glad that they're being a bit more organised with their information, because it definitely cuts down on the amount of speculation.
I mean, as a result of that, quite a lot of people have legged it out. And, you know, people in the UK having vaccines, people missing their holidays. And frankly, quite a lot of people have been happily earning their regular salary while waiting at home and not being able to spend it. So there are people with disposable income who want to go on holiday. Yeah.
Lucky them.
Well, you think about it. If you're normally working in an office and you're working from home, you've got your regular salary. Maybe you don't have to pay any petrol to commute in. Maybe you don't have to spend £5 a day on your lunch. You haven't been out to the cinema. You haven't been out on holiday.
Yeah.
You haven't been to restaurants, but your money's still coming in. So some lucky people in the population, we're not one of them, have actually got more disposable income than they've ever had. So there is a good pent-up demand, as they say, to come to places like Mallorca on holiday if the conditions allow. So that's May the 17th at the earliest. There has been a big surge in bookings, albeit from a very low level. People are talking about 600-700% increase in bookings, but from almost nothing. So, you know, it's not a normal season.
We
but
can't
there is
wait
some
to see you.
There's some grounds for optimism.
Mallorca really needs you.
Having said that, you know, it takes two to tango here. It takes the UK to allow people to travel, but also the conditions need to be right here to allow people to come in.
True.
And given the fact that almost everywhere, including the Balearics, is considerably behind the UK for vaccine rollouts, are we going to be ready to receive them? That's the biggie.
Who knows?
Well, there's talks about trying to accelerate vaccines to people who work in the tourism business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's a goer. It's a controversial subject, say the least. And also vaccine passports, as in if, you know, for instance, the Balearics might say, right, if you want to come on holiday to the Balearics, you'll need a proof of vaccination. Partly the reason for doing that is because it's attractive. If you're in the UK and you think, well, I'm going to go on holiday, I've had my vaccine, then perhaps somewhere that insists on vaccine passports makes you think, well, that's a safe place to go. I'd like to go there. So I think Greece are talking about that as well. So it's going to be a very competitive summer with desperate resorts chasing a relatively small number of people who want to come. So it might be a business case.
Do you know how many people have been vaccinated in the Balearics so far?
Go on.
Okay. There have been 79,600 doses of vaccination so far delivered to the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And of these, 63,991 have been administered. And that is a a total of 21,598 people have been given both doses.
Okay.
And then by Ireland, it's 51,765 vaccines in Majorca, 5,400 in Minorca, 6,500 in Ibiza, and 349 in Formentera. Obviously, they're focusing on health workers first, and people with high dependency, like very vulnerable people. And then they're doing caregivers. And apparently this weekend, just coming up, 7,000 people are scheduled to be vaccinated in Sondaleta, in the COVID Express facility, where they just basically, they can. I think they're going to do a drive-through.
That's been there for months.
But no, it used to be a walk-through.
Okay.
But I haven't seen anybody driving in there, because I have to go there a lot because Gigi School's right next door. Mm. And of those 7,000 people that are being vaccinated this weekend, 1,500 of them are infant and special needs teachers.
And just to let you know, to put it in context, there's the Balearic population is around 1.1 million. So it's a very tiny drop in the ocean. It is a small percentage, but it's good to see it happening. Sondaleta is the old main hospital of Parma that was sort of semi-closed a couple of years ago when the new hospital at Sonna Spasses was built. But
it's going to become a centre for the third age.
Okay.
The older people.
Oh, they finish it in time for us to get there.
Yeah, I hope so.
But it's become a. They've commandeered a car park, so it's got little marquees and gazebos up. So it's a kind of testing station. I guess we'll turn into a vaccination station
More news about the tourism industry. An interesting new hotel development is happening in Banja Luka.
Yeah. Actually, well, we've been talking the last couple of podcasts about the acquisition and remodeling of the Hotel Formentor by a consortium, including Bill Gates, into this ultra-luxury place. But Mallorca favourite, Richard Branson, who's got a lot of connections here, hasn't he? I mean, he used to own the world-famous Residencia Hotel, which is a gorgeous spot in Deia. He hasn't owned that for a few years, but he owned that while Princess Diana used to go and stay there. He's got one of his granddaughters, I think, has actually got Deia as a middle name.
Yes.
Yeah, so he does like it. I mean, he owns a property called Son Bunyola, which is not in Bunyola. It's in Banja Luka. And we talked about him quite early in the podcast because a hurricane went through his property.
Yeah.
But he has been trying to turn this into an ultra luxury.
Is that the house
country.
That was hit by the hurricane?
It was one of them. Yeah. Ooh. It's a huge estate. I think it went through his grounds. I'm not sure it damaged the. Don't think it damaged the house, but it took quite a few pine trees out. But he's been trying to turn this into an ultra luxury, shishi, beautiful stone hotel-y thing in the middle of nowhere.
It's small, luxury, 29-room, luxury hotel.
I'm assuming we won't be able to afford it.
I want to go so badly.
I probably can't even afford to go over the gate, to be honest. So he's been given permission. And it was years ago he tried to get permission for this. Because Banja Luka is one of the tiny little towns. It's not as fashionable as Deia by any means, but it is very beautiful. And it's very famous for its bancales, the earthworks. And it's a stunning spot. And he tried years ago to do it. To set it up, and the people of Bunyola went, no, we don't want your big hotel here. And he went, all right, and disappeared.
Bugger off, Harry.
And then, but the problem that Banja Luka and a few other these other more remote villages have had actually is because there's no real work in the village. Young people have been moving away. They moved to Parma to get jobs in insurance companies rather than picking almonds and all of the other things that people do there. And actually, they've realized that if they don't hang on to the young people, then they suddenly lose the school and then you start losing the soul of these places. And I don't know whether it played any part in this granting a permission for his hotel, but certainly a few years ago, they turned around instead of saying, no, Mr. Branson, they said, please come back, Mr. Branson. Mm. Because actually, the people from the village maybe can work on the estate, work in the hotel, and actually it might even be the thing that keeps the village going. I hope so. Anyway, it's a lovely spot. I cycle through it regularly, sweating cobs. It's very hilly.
It's beautiful.
It's lovely. So, and he's aiming at 20. Is it 2023?
They want to start. They want to start developing it and reforming it this year. And it's a 2-year project. So, 2023.
Right. So, if we put £5 a week into a jar, we could afford about an hour and a half.
We could probably afford breakfast.
Yeah.
Happy, and we have to say happy anniversary to democracy this week, actually.
Well, it's not happy anniversary to democracy, it's happy anniversary that democracy was saved.
Well, same sort of thing.
Just about.
In Spain.
Yeah, F-23. Is it F-23?
Yes, F-23.
Well, I'm going to hand over to you, and it's the 40th anniversary of the attempted coup, which was quite a dramatic moment of in 1981. Over to you. You've been reading about this.
This is really interesting. I think that, well, maybe we should also talk about the last statue of Franco in the whole kind of same conversation, because the last statue of Franco in Spain was removed this week in a place called Melilla.
Melilla, yeah, which is
near, where is it?
Well, it depends on your point of view.
I'm not good at geography.
It's in Africa.
Yeah.
I've got into trouble with this book.
Yeah, don't say it.
It's basically a little bit of Morocco with a fence around it. Mm. And there's two. Spain has got two of those. It's got Melilla and Ceuta, which are, well, I am going to say it, very much a bit of Spain in the same way that Gibraltar's a bit of Britain, in the kind of that it's a bit of an outlier. You know, it's a long way from home, and it's kind of sitting in another country. But this was. Obviously, Francisco Franco, the fascist dictator who won the Civil War and was in charge of ran Spain as a dictatorship until his death in 1976. There were statues and streets named after him and all kinds of stuff everywhere, as you can imagine. Dictators do like a bit of a statue, don't they, of themselves?
1975 he died.
1975 he died, right. So, yeah. He liked naming buildings and putting statues up to himself. The one in Melilla actually was put up after his death in 1978, but it's been removed now, and it was the last statue of Franco anywhere in Spain, as Spain kind of, for the want of a better expression, I suppose, cleanses itself of that part of its history. It doesn't erase it, but it stops celebrating it. So yeah.
Well, that story about a Japanese soldier coming out of the jungle in the 70s.
1976.
And he still thought the war was going on.
Yeah, that's a great story.
It is a true story.
It is, well, yeah.
Because that really reminded me about the story of the attempted coup.
You need to finish that story.
Go on then, you tell the story. Well, carry on.
Obviously, the Japanese surrendered in the Second World War, 1945, after the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but they were defending little islands all over the place from the South China Sea. And some, I think it was one guy or a couple of guys, were actually defending their little bit of South China Sea island until 1976, because they didn't believe, when people said, come on, the war's finished, you can come out now. And they didn't believe it. So I think they had to send...
Hiro Onoda.
Yeah, I think they had to send Hirohito or somebody senior or something like that to actually say, listen, you know, it's finished decades ago.
After the war, Onoda spent 29 years in the Philippines until his former commander travelled from Japan to formally relieve him from duty in 1974.
He must have put a hell of an overtime
training. Wow, can you imagine the stress?
He probably forgot what he was doing there. He was probably sort of it was probably Tom Hanks after Castle, wasn't he?
Anyway, yeah. That guy's
I'd like to claim for 30 years of overtime, please.
Onoda's dedication to his job made me think he came to mind when I was reading about this chap who was in charge of the coup. And this person was Lieutenant Colonel Antonio Tejero. Mm-hmm. And he was in the military, and he wasn't very happy about democracy happening in Spain.
No.
Even though it had been going on for about 5 or 6 years at this point. And actually, the Spanish Parliament was in the transition, they call it, to democracy. And they were in the process of deciding on a new prime minister and who should be the prime minister. Not a general election, but actually within the parliament themselves, they were figuring out who they were going to vote for.
So the representative elected people were voting for a new PM.
And he decided, and Tejero, he led 200 armed civil guard, Guardia Civil officers into the Congress of Deputies on the 23rd of February. And he basically held them, the parliamentarians and the ministers, hostage for 18 hours overnight, during which time the king at the time, King Juan Carlos I, what's the word for retired king, Ollie?
Emeritus, is
emeritus,
that what we're looking for?
Emeritus, thank you.
King forever.
King Emeritus Juan Carlos I, he was involved in breaking down, breaking the what's the word I'm trying to think of? He was involved in dissolving the tension.
Okay, dissipating.
Thank you. He denounced the coup in a televised address, and he was also, the king, this is, was also very involved in talking Tejero down, calling for the rule of law and the democratic government to continue. And that is one of the reasons why the Spanish people still love King Emeritus Juan Carlos I.
Some of them do.
Even though he's killed elephants, had terribly like racy affairs and stolen loads of tax. That is one of the reasons why they love him still.
That
because
is...
of that action, the act that he, that happened.
Yeah, you need to be careful about saying that, though, because it's not, the royal family is not enormously popular here.
Ollie, this is the reason. This is, he did a big thing and he's still... what he could have done at that point is sided with the military, but no, he decided instead to continue to support democracy, and it was down to him that the military pulled back.
To qualify your statement a bit, I think he has cemented popularity in older Spaniards. I think the younger ones are struggling a bit. The people who don't remember 1981.
I don't like him at all. I think he's a anyway, that's another podcast.
It was definitely his golden sort of hour, wasn't it? Though, these times, it's less so recently.
But if you look up Storming of Madrid Congress on YouTube, for example, there's some really interesting, very old pieces of TV footage that are on there that are fascinating to watch. And also El País, which is a newspaper in Madrid, which was at the time a very young newspaper. It printed 7 editions of the paper within 2 or 3 days because that was the only way people could get their news.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So I was fascinated by that story, and it's inspired me to learn more about. I'm terribly lazy with these sorts of things. I just basically go when you tell me something and just assume that that's always right. When actually I should go and find out for myself.
You take democracy for granted a bit, really, but it is still quite a new thing here, relatively speaking. It's younger than me, and I'm a mere slip of a lad.
You are a wee striplet.
Exactly.
But you know who's the person that contacted us recently? Andy Rawson. He wants to get involved with telling some history stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah, we're going to try and do that. Actually, Andrew Rawson. We'll call him Andrew. I think he's an author now.
Are you able to call him his full name?
Oh, I don't know, but he's Andrew Rawson. Is lived in Santa Ponsa for a good long while, and he is a really great history writer and author and speaker. And while he was here, he spent a lot of time kind of trying to make little short guides about towns and history and various, as much about Mallorcan history as possible, and presenting it in a way that non-Catalan or non-Spanish speakers could understand. And he put a lot of work into it. He's moved back to the UK 2-3 years ago now and lives in Sheffield.
He's a granddad now.
He is a granddad.
I think that's why he went.
Oh yeah, could be. And we'll link to his podcast. Now his big thing really is military history, particularly the First World War. So he's written loads of books,
lots and lots of books.
And has recently embarked on a podcast series about British military history in the First World War. So he's a very he's a very clever man, actually.
So we're going to have some of his.
Well, he's kindly allowed us a bit of access to his back catalogue, because unfortunately, the website that had all of these, it was called Mallorca Days Out.
What happened to it?
Well, it's no longer online anymore. I think he thought, I don't live there anymore, I'm going to bother. So he's got all of this work just sitting on his hard drive somewhere, so it seems a shame not to do anything with it. So he's graciously said he's going to send us some bits, and we'll try and maybe make some videos or voice them over a bit to tell you a little bit about Mallorca
history.
I would like
to go to the places where the history is happening. So if it's like a history story about the cathedral, we should go to the cathedral, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
We'll try and do that.
So. I like that when we went on location and last week. I know that everyone who listened to the podcast last week of us hiking really enjoyed it.
Very good. All right. Well, we'll try that then.
And also,
we'll get 5 minutes.
Hello to a couple of people now before we say our last couple of things. We should say hello to the new listeners of Lunar Radio.
Yeah, actually, I meant to look this up. Okay, where do we start with that? Give us a bit of history of Lunar Radio.
Right, well, we used to be on Lunar Radio when it was broadcasting back, 10 years ago? in Mallorca.
You know, and then I don't actually remember.
Laura Penn, who was the owner and founder of the radio station, closed it down and went back to the UK. And now they've started up again.
Yeah, so it was just about pre-Facebook and all of those things. There was a little radio station.
No. It wasn't pre-Facebook.
It wasn't quite, but it was before lots of people were using it. And it was a real hub, actually. It was broadcast out of a top secret location in the Calvia area in a hollowed out volcano. And it broadcast mostly to sort of, not quite island wide, but certainly to a lot of the population of the southwest. And it was a real hub, you know, there was lots of watch ons. We had loads of listeners and competitions.
Yeah,
and
it was
really good fun, actually. So, yeah, and as you mentioned, Laura, a couple of years later, went back to the UK, but she's always held a candle for this island in the Med.
She has.
I think. And she's launched Luna Radio again online, so, and you may well be listening to this on it.
Yeah, because we're apparently
tomorrow.
We're being broadcast on a, is it Sunday morning?
I think it's
out?
A Sunday morning. Yeah, she Laura
we should
contacted
be playing
us.
Love songs or something like Steve Wright.
There we go. So happy Sunday morning if you're listening to this on Luna Radio.
What we should do is play punk rock now because we were never allowed to play
that's true. I do miss Laura's egg butties, though.
She was good at egg sandwiches.
Anyway, so that's, yeah. So we'll put a link to that so you can listen to, it's an online radio station that she's launched with a sort of slant to Mallorca. Mm. There's a few familiar faces.
Well, voices.
Voices you might hear on it. So, yeah.
And you've got some news to tell us about the 6 points challenge, because obviously all this business with travel and not travel, has changed a few plans, I guess.
Yeah, we interviewed Brian Visser in October for the podcast. We have he started a thing, a charity cycle ride called the 6 points. And if you want to listen to, if you want to know more about that, go back and listen to that or look at the link below. But just briefly, it's a bike ride for 3 days. And the idea is to go to the highest, lowest, north, south, east and westerly most points of Mallorca. Really equates to a loop over 3 days. And it's lovely because of it, sort of 50, 60, 70 people all staying in the same hotel and drinking beer and having dinner together, riding together during the day. And we raise a bit of money for charity, most recently for Azdica, which is a charity based in Calvia that helps learning disabled people and their families. So they really value the support. It's a very small organization. So even the money that 6 points raised, which is around in excess of 20 grand a year, which is pretty good, that really makes a big difference to them. However, it's supposed to happen in May. It was supposed to happen in May in 2020. It didn't. It happened in October. And we were looking forward to doing it again in May of this year. But we could still do it. But it's a little too close to people's lockdowns, I think. And particularly as we usually welcome quite a few people from the UK, if we were looking at Boris Johnson unlocking international travel on the 17th of May and ours would be the next weekend, it's a bit too close for comfort, really. Mm. And a lot of the hotels are a little unsure about if or when they're going to open this year. So they've decided to move it to October. So 6 points Mallorca will be on October the 1st, 2nd and 3rd. So please come along and join us if you want. You've now got loads of time to train. Look, we'll clink. We'll link to 6 points at the bottom. It's really good fun. It's we've got monthly rides coming up soon, where we go out usually on a Saturday or a Sunday and we ride out to have a bit of lunch and ride back again. We need to be sure that the regulations are opened up to allow us to do that. But hopefully maybe towards the end of March, if we're allowed to do that, because the bars are open from Tuesday.
Yahoo!
But we're only allowed in groups of six. So there isn't much of a ride. So we have to wait for that to be relaxed a bit. As a 6 points, we're always looking for volunteers. The whole thing's run by volunteers. And the volunteers work really hard and they seem to have at least as much fun as the riders. So
if you want to volunteer,
it's a happy bunch.
Yeah.
And you'll have a little warm glow of doing something nice. October the 1st, 2nd and 3rd. Come and join us.
I'll put it in my diary because obviously I'll be having some kind of house party whilst you're away.
Or I've got 6 months to get you on a bike.
Oh, God.
8 months.
No.
There you go. You'll be fine by then.
Happy Balearic Day, sweetheart.
Thank you very much.
Monday. Balearic Day.
It's a day off. Another one.
Well, it is a Balearic. I mean, it's a nice bank holiday.
Why did they open the pubs?
On the 2nd?
The day after the fiesta.
Why do you think?
Because they don't want people to go to the pubs.
Yeah.
So they're only opening them when people are at work.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Come on.
That's not going to encourage people to work very much.
I know, but the point is that they don't want to go backwards. I don't want to go backwards into a lockdown where I'm stuck in my house again. Do you?
No. So we've celebrated 40 years since the ending of a coup. last week, and then this year is the how many years?
1983 was the first Balearic Day.
On the 1st of March 1983, the Balearics was granted an autonomous status within Spain, very much in the same way that Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland are devolved in the UK. They have their own parliament, they have their own president here, whereas it's a first minister in the UK. And it was the same day that lots of quite a few other places also within Spain were given an autonomous position. So actually, it's not just Balearic Day; it's lots of other bits of Spain's day as well.
But normally on Balearic Day, it's a really nice day out. There's a lot of stuff going on in Palma. Obviously, this year nothing will be happening.
No, it is fun. It's just a general celebration of everything Balearic, really. Mm, people food. Dance around in baggy trousers and having sobrasada on Kelly biscuits, and. Riding a bike. There's normally a big bike ride on that day, but nothing.
And also, it's a year today since we went on our big walk around the from the top of the island to the bottom of the island.
It is. All of which were in the last episode.
Yeah.
The hiking episode, the GR221. We won't cover that ground again, but it's a big footpath.
That runs from one end to the island.
Hey, well, we will one day.
I hope so. I think I'd like to do the Menorca one next.
I think that's a bit easier, isn't it?
It's much easier. It's much flatter.
Flatter and smaller.
I think actually you can do it over quite a long period of time, though. There's various stages you can do. Anyway, what else you got for me?
Are we done?
I think we are done. Yes.
We'll keep in touch. Listen to Lunar Radio.
If you want.
Have a listen to that. Have a shifty at that. And please get in touch if you want to. We are on social media.
Oh, yes.
Probably already found.
How's the Twitter going on?
Not very well. Give us a like and a share and a rate and a tell your mates and all of that kind of thing.
If you like to listen to... us nattering on about Mallorca and occasionally trying to interview people about what they're doing in Mallorca and their lives here, then please do follow our podcast. You can just click subscribe wherever you listen. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram. You can send us an email to MallorcaMallorcaPodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, and maybe one day Ollie will get round to tweeting
something interesting. I'm waiting for something really interesting.
Liar.
Which I'm waiting for the pubs to open.
That's what we're going to do. Our next one
we're going to record
is going to be at the pub
on Tuesday.
All right.
I'm booking myself out for the day. One of the joys of being self-employed.
Really?
While the rest of you suckers are at work looking at the pubs open, the self-employed are taking the day off. See you next time. Mallorca, Mallorca, Mallorca.